I find more gratitude, more thankfulness. I'm happier with my life when I'm giving out to other people, when I'm pouring into others, because it's the thing that'll give right back right away.
Welcome to another episode of How Are You Helping? A podcast that explores this question by bringing in guests who focus on altruism, activism, and giving to their communities with their work, projects, and causes they are pioneering. Like the social media platform, the podcast highlights work that benefits communities with various humanitarian needs, animals, and the environment. The topic of today's conversation is on Friends of the Fatherless, an international charitable organization run by Gary Mabou that helps abandoned children around the world. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Matt Mabou, his son, who has recently returned from helping abandoned children in the Philippines. Now that Matt has returned to the U.S., he has been busy spreading awareness about the orphan crisis around the world and serving in any way he can. Now, before I start this interview, I want to briefly talk about the orphan crisis around the globe. According to Matt, there are roughly 153 million orphans worldwide, and a staggering 5,700 more each day. Often, these children are relinquished from their families due to poverty, war, natural disasters, and health conditions. In many developing countries, orphanages abound to support the needs of these children. Additionally, there are many other challenges preventing children from being adopted, whether it be disabilities, government restrictions, geographic restrictions, and diseases like HIV and AIDS and other physical and mental conditions. So Friends of the Fatherless steps in to provide education to orphanage directors around the globe, encouraging them at an annual orphanage directors conference, and supporting their efforts to save these innocent and vulnerable children with no other foreseeable path to a stable home. It is worthy to note that there are some instances that orphanages or volunteering for orphanages is not the best option to help abandoned children. The voluntourism industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. Profit-driven orphanages are out there, which is where the tourism industry exploits kids for the sake of giving people who want to do good things a volunteer experience, which might seem noble or good at first glance, but take advantage of the children that they serve. Friends of the Fatherless is, fortunately, not affiliated with the tourism industry and is not part of that system. But how does one know the difference? If you want to volunteer overseas, how do you separate a bad orphanage from a good one? Well, if you're going to volunteer, research ethical organizations. Childcare institutions should work with parents to reintegrate children into their home community. These institutions should be doing basic things like respecting local laws, protecting against tourism. Volunteers should have some work and life experience and skills, and the staff should be qualified to work with children, among other things. These orphanages should not be using the children to get donations, for example, by exposing their identities by posting their pictures with their full names. Friends of the Fatherless is not an orphanage, and it does not participate in any of these above activities. Today, lots of organizations have been arising with the goal of ending orphanages and replacing them with family care-based models and community-based care models. These models are good and worthy movements, but as of now, they aren't the only solution to the crisis. There are still children who face repeat rejection from foster care, kids who become teenagers and age out of the system, and others who just can't find a home. Let's remember to appreciate and acknowledge the orphanage directors and those involved in caring for several dozen children each, who are often burnt out, in need of financial and emotional resources, and rest. Friends of the Fatherless provides them with an international summit that gives them renewal, encouragement, and a sense of pride in taking care of these vulnerable children. Now, whether or not you believe in orphanages or institutions as a viable solution for children abroad, you have to appreciate that Matt is actually taking action, doing something to spread a little bit of love and care for these children across the globe. And we have to thank his dad, Gary, for the wonderful work he's doing abroad as well in his ministry. I hope this episode raises your awareness of the severity of the issue. I am so excited for you all to hear this interview with Matt Mabou on his work in the Philippines, including why it was so hard for him to say goodbye and his tips for our listeners. Without further ado, I'd like to give a warm welcome to Matt Mabou. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Sean. Happy to be here.
Let's start off the interview with some questions about the work that you do and then finish up with some rapid-fire questions towards the end of the interview. Sound good?
You got it.
Awesome. Let's get started. So let's start out with Friends of the Fatherless. Can you talk about what led your dad to start this nonprofit and why in the Philippines?
So in 2003, my dad's heart was really unsettled. He was fed up with consumption culture and living a life that seemed to lack real fruit. Grew up in a pretty big bubble in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places. He wanted to make a difference, but he didn't know how, so he started fasting. And I remember when I was in at the beginning of high school, my dad would actually, he would sleep on the floor. And that was what he fasted with, and it was years. Eventually, he saw a Times Magazine article which read Orphan Crisis, 95 million, and that stuck with him. And he decided that he needed to do something about it. So through this headline, he realized how well fed and blessed we are, yet 95 million people were struggling, starving, fighting for existence. Orphans in need of someone with a willing heart, ready to get out onto the battlefield, not just by giving, but to really get involved. He wanted to connect, to care, to share, to teach. So he started Friends of the Fatherless. He wanted to help the orphans, and he also wanted to help the orphan leaders. So, yeah, that's how it started.
That's amazing. That's an incredible story. Wow. So this is a question I'm going to ask to every guest from now on, regardless of the cost. Why do you love to help others?
Probably because I'm an extremely selfish person, and it's the best feeling on earth seeing someone else light up for something that you did that was just so simple, like kindness. We're called to love each other, so why not? It's fun.
Amazing. So for the listeners, I did meet Matt helping out at the People's Concern in Santa Monica. Has community service work come naturally to you, or did it take some time to cultivate that level of compassion?
Honestly, it didn't. For a majority of my life, I can say that I've been a really selfish person. And I didn't used to be, I would say, a particularly nice person.
Wow. So what made the change for you?
Well, first of all, my faith really stepped in and kind of made my heart a little more gentle, and also kind of focusing on the things around me and always chasing after, you know, cars or money or whatever it is, it just wasn't fulfilling at the end of the day.
Right.
And I had to make a change because I was so unhappy, you know? So I got more involved in my faith, and through it all, I've noticed that I find more gratitude, more thankfulness. I'm happier with my life when I'm giving out to other people, when I'm pouring into others, because it's the thing that'll give right back right away. And I mean, it's so funny because even like with this organization, when my dad started it, when he really started it and he started traveling, he did it when I was around 16 years old. And I was really jealous. I was jealous of the kids, which is not a good look. But I was a brat. So I was really upset about the fact that my dad, who, you know, was supposed to be my dad around for me, wasn't. And it wasn't that he necessarily wasn't there to support me, but he was just really passionate about this cause. And I didn't really get it. So for a while, like, he would go on these trips and I wouldn't even know that he was out of town. I would call and I'd need something and I would find out that he was out of town just because of the international ringtone and it just hang up.
Really?
It made me mad. But when I went on this trip this time, 16 years later, might I add, I met some of the kids that were kids when he went out there for the first time. And they were grown up now. They were graduating college. They were working full time in the actual ranch. And, you know, one of them actually said thank you. She told me thank you for sharing your dad with me. And it kind of shocked me. My dad was like, do you see now? Do you see why I had to do this? And yeah, I did. But, you know, it never truly got to me. It never was real until I actually went out there. And then when I went out there, I saw all these kids who had so much less than me. I was sitting here in my private school driving my little convertible around in high school, and my dad is out here serving these kids, pouring into them because they don't have parents. They don't have, you know, family supporting them. The family they have on Christmas is the family that they're around on the orphanage and the people who come out to love on them, right? So having that experience where I was face to face with someone who I had this whole story and grudge made out in my head was just earth shattering. It really, it shocked me, and it put me in a place where it was like, wow, look how little you actually know. And from that place is where I was able to start saying, hey, this is an issue. This is a problem. This is something that needs to change. This is something that is going to be spectacular.
So that's what inspired you to spread awareness of the plight of these children.
Yeah.
And to take action for their future.
Totally. Yeah. Like just seeing how much of an impact something that my dad did years ago mm-hmm. made on me now, right? Or yeah. made on these kids their entire lives. It's been... My world's been flipped upside down since I went out there.
So in which countries does Friends of the Fatherless operate in? And how many countries have you personally served in?
So it's 15 countries. It's all over the world. Tanzania, Jinja, India, Cambodia, Philippines, El Salvador, Juarez, you know, all over the world. I personally have only been to the Philippines. This is a newer venture for me, and working with my dad has been something that's been really, it's been really cool, really great to see this fruit kind of come to fruition.
Wow, that's incredible. Can you describe the mission behind the organization and what made your father choose these countries to operate in?
Yeah, so the mission is to, and I'll just read it verbatim, we are committed to one and only main purpose, helping orphan children and helping their caregivers help them. Within our ranks, every person, every program, every resource used, every dollar spent, every meeting, every prayer is directed to helping the orphan children somewhere on this earth. So with, in terms of the organizations that he chooses to work with, it's any organization that needs help. They're welcome to come in. He'll provide as much help as he can give, you know. The really cool part about this organization is that it's not just about pouring into the kids and taking people out there and, you know, giving them gifts and taking them to the beach and playing with them, which is super fun, you know.
Yeah.
These trips are amazing because you just get to go out there and be a kid for a week. It's I mean, how often do you get to do that? But for him specifically, with the organizations that come in, we really have a heart for helping the leaders of these organizations too. And as these leaders go out there, a lot of times it's a father and mother, you know, a married couple who decides they want to start an orphanage, and they go out to the country and they have to navigate all of these things, like the politics of actually doing it, the social work, the governmental restrictions, finding a place to house all of these kids, bringing these new kids in. How do you onboard a kid who's been living under a bridge for 4 years into a community that has rules and structure and they're not allowed to just do whatever they want anymore? You know, so it's kind of, how do you do that? What Friends of the Fatherless really does is once a year, they bring all of these leaders together. So this year it was in Singapore. They brought everyone together. They did it at this camp, like outside of town, and they have worship and devotionals and a summit where they have the leaders teaching each other how to better lead these kids and how to fill them up. So they fill each other up so they can fill the kids up.
That's great. So can you describe the community that your father's team is helping? What is the average demographic of the orphans that Friends of the Fatherless helps?
So it's really kind of across the board. You know, there's, it's from babies up to 18-year-olds. The demographic is really, I mean, the children of the world that are in need. When he first started the organization, it was 95 million. I looked it up this morning. It's 158 million.
Oh my gosh.
Children are displaced or homeless or in orphans.
Staggering.
5,700 children every single day become orphans. 5,700. Wow. That's what the crisis is right now. That's what's happening in our world. You know,
it's unbelievable.
And yeah, we especially living, it's crazy because, you know, we live in LA. We live in the land of Maseratis and marble tabletops, and all we have is what's right in front of us. And one of the big things that I learned going out there was just seeing how much more grateful they were. Because they had so much less. When you have so many things, you forget to be grateful for what you have and you think that you need more. And I think that this was such a good way to really realize what I do have right in front of me. You know, I came back here and I felt kind of guilty, honestly. I went through a little bit of a depression after this trip because I was trying to reconcile what I had seen out there with the lifestyle that I live here. And it balances out eventually, where you realize that you need to, you're here for a mission and you need to continue on that mission. But it doesn't hurt to know that. It doesn't hurt to like be more grateful for the things that you have right here, right in front of you. You know, we have a bed, we have a roof, we have food in our fridge. We're more blessed. Like our homeless are wealthier than some of the people that are in these third worlds. We don't need a lot. I was honestly just waking up, like the day to day there was just waking up. Breakfast was toast with, you know, some jam and a coffee. They have those 3-in-1 coffees that you just mix in, the dilutable coffee, just like a powder, and you pour it in your coffee, in your hot water, and it becomes coffee. Which at first it was like, how am I gonna do this? But then by the end of it, I was just, yeah, give me some toast, give me some coffee. I don't need a lot. I'm just gonna hang out. And it was just so peaceful. You hear kids laughing every single morning. You walk out your front door and 6 little children say, "Hi, Kuya Matthew." And it's just, it's so good. It's so good.
That's incredible. What orphanages did you visit in the Philippines, and what did the work look like day to day?
So we went to 2 orphanages while we were there. We went to one in Sarayaya, Quezon, which is a province outside of Manila, and then Morongay Cuyumbay. And the one in Sarayaya is a ranch, and it's for children, babies up to high school age. But typically it's like younger, and then there's a gap, and then there's the older kids who are the independent living kids, and they're just kind of teaching them how to live on their own, support themselves. You know, they kind of, the older ones take care of the younger ones. There's definitely work mentality on the ranch, because the sad fact of it is that after these kids leave, it's very unlikely that someone's going to ever take care of them. So they try to teach them how to take care of themselves. And it's just the reality of the situation. And it's sad, but it's good, because they learn how to, like, there's no running water. You have to pump your water. They pump their own water. They clean their own dishes. They wash their own clothes. They're really well behaved. They all go to school. If they misbehave in school, you know, like they can't like do certain activities. It's like growing up anywhere, right? Like, but they have chores and they have to learn how to do that. And that's what they try to instill in them. Then there's another orphanage that we went to, and it's a boys' home. And those are all independent living kids. So the way that you have to adopt a child from the Philippines, it takes about 3 years, $40,000, and you don't actually get to choose the child that you would like to adopt. You're assigned a child by the Filipino government. And what happens is, by the time these kids are about 12 or 13, no one really wants to adopt a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, you know? And by the time they start the adoption process and end it, those kids have already aged out. So if they're not adopted by around that age, most organizations like these will change their focus from, let's get these kids adopted, to let's just teach them how to survive, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. But so that's what the second one that we went to went. It was a all boys home, and it was really just all street boys who just, you know, been in gangs, done everything from like, have been involved in everything from like drugs or trafficking to sex trafficking to just crazy things.
So that kind of leads into my next question. What is the most shocking or the craziest thing that you remember seeing while doing work abroad?
Just the poverty, I think, was really crazy. I'd gone to Bali a couple years ago, but I was staying at a resort. We had a driver. I wasn't really on the ground with it, but this time I was. And it was different just being in that space. You know, just seeing mothers bathing their children on the side of the road, or I remember we stopped at a like it was a convenience store. And there was a weird bathroom off to the side, and I need to go pee. So I went, and there's just this lady, and it smelled terrible. It smelled disgusting. And she was literally just like living in it. And it was just, it was a crazy thing. And you had to pay her to use the bathroom. But like, that was like her space of her little corner of the world. So I think that really seeing these people and their lives are so different than ours. It's not necessarily better or worse, because I can't argue either way, because sometimes I'd see these people who I was like, how are you living your life that way? But they were happier than I was, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say that, but that was shocking to kind of see that people could find joy with so little.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it teaches us as a society, like, how much we really take for granted and what we can do to minimize the amount of things that we have in our lives while amplifying the level of joy, gratitude, feelings of fulfillment, and being blessed.
Yeah. It's also about, like, you know, minimizing is amazing, but it's also, like, be grateful for what you have. You know, like, we think we need so much more than we do. We do. And that's just such a... That's, I guess, the big thing from today is really going to probably be, like, just be grateful because, you know...
Totally.
For whatever reason, you just happen to be in a place where you're not in that situation. And that is, like, that's grace. Right there.
I like that a lot, Matt. Thank you. So I kind of want to shift gears now, and I want to ask you a couple questions regarding your personal life and what other events may have shifted your worldview and why.
You know, this was... I got a letter from one of these kids. There are a lot of events that have, but I think that this was one that was kind of, as I was leaving, I didn't want to leave at the very end of it. When I got there, I couldn't wait to leave. And then by the time I was leaving, I didn't want to leave. They had to kind of push me into the van. But a bunch of the kids wrote me letters as I was leaving. And they kept, like, dropping them off as I was walking through the ranch and stuff. It was, like, crazy. But one of these girls wrote me a letter, and I'll read it. And it's just super cute. It shows, "Dear Kuya Matthew." Well, Matthew, because they said my name wrong. But and Kuya means big brother. "Thank you for making us happy in a few days. You're such a great visitor in the ranch, and thank you for a nice game you taught to us. I hope you will come back again so that we will have so much fun with your whole family. We all enjoy when you are in here and when you are making us laugh so much. Thank you for telling a story to us. You and your dad are such a great helper and a great best friend. You are the most best friend in our life. We will cry and cry when you leave us. As you look at the sky, you will see how many of the stars are. That is how much we love you so much. We miss you so much, Kuya Matthew. I hope you will have a nice trip. Thank you for spending your time just to come on the ranch. I hope this letter will cheer you up. Come back soon, best friend. Forever, I love you so much."
That is amazing, Matt. Thank you so much for sharing that here on this podcast. It just really means so much and makes such a difference to hear really the impact you're making on these people's lives and the way that you're really personally invested in them. And I can hear it in your voice and the way that you share that story.
That girl lived under a bridge with her sister and her mom, who was a drug addict. And her mom eventually gave the kids up to the government. They placed them at this home. And the only way that she could, because she was illiterate, was with her thumbprint. That's what was put on the papers. But, like, just for someone to have had that experience and still be able to pour out love like that, like, what? What are we doing? How are we helping?
Yeah. It makes us want to step up our impact and make a bigger difference in the world.
Do something. They're real. Yeah. These kids are real. They're there, you know?
Now, with Friends of the Fatherless, what would you say is your father's vision for the future?
My father's vision for the future is to prop up the next generation in helping these kids. He's 65, so I mean, he's getting older, but his thing is really setting it up so a new generation can come in and continue this work, because it's not something that's going to stop, you know? Right. It's something that's going to continue to occur, and we just want to do as much as we can, and we need an entire new generation to do it. Mm-hmm. So Gen Z, like, we talking to you, it's time to like stand up and do that. It's time to start giving.
All right. So outside of giving and serving and looking at your life, your day-to-day life in LA or in New Mexico, what are some practical steps that you take or have taken in the past that have enhanced your daily life?
Mornings. Like when I get up early, go to the gym, drink my coffee, read. Before work, I feel like I'm on fire and ready to take on the world. I think that it's so important to get up earlier in the day. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to sleep. Like, love to sleep. But it really just getting up early, I think, helps so much prepare you mentally for the full day.
What time do you typically wake up?
On a good day, 6. Sometimes 5:30. It just depends on... Mondays are normally around, like, 5:30. But... yeah, but then, you know, 6, 7, or 8, but I try not to get up after that unless it's the weekend, then I'll sleep.
What is your favorite quote and who said it and why is it your favorite?
My favorite quote would probably have to be, it's not for our desires, but for our design that we all fall apart. And I love that quote because it's just so true. We're imperfect at the core. There's no way that we're ever going to attain perfection or, right, you know, have that in our space. But we're going to fall apart. And it's not because we want to, but just because we're inherently flawed. And despite what our desires are, it's going to happen. That being said, which is kind of, you know, that's kind of dark. But that being said, we have the opportunity to not let that overtake us, let the avalanche continue, and to just kind of lean in and slow down.
Nice, nice. One way to improve ourselves is looking at what we've learned through our failures. What 2 or 3 things have not gone the way that you thought that they would, and how did you overcome those failures, and what lessons did they teach you?
In past positions, like for work and stuff, I think that my biggest failure has been patience. I think that that's super important.
Isn't that true for all of us?
I mean, oh my gosh. I want what I want and I want it now. And if I don't get it, I get really upset and I try to find another way to do it. And in trying to find another way to do it, I work harder, which no one wants to do. And second of all, I end up messing things up or I make a mistake and then I really just put myself in a hole. So I think that by not having patience, I've learned to be patient. And that's something that just from the mistakes from all those failures that I've had have really taught me to kind of be more consistent and persistent with the things that I do want to do and realizing that it's the small victories, right, that are going to eventually add up. So being patient in those times between the little victories that are eventually going to get to the place where you want to be. That's the thing that's really hard.
Yeah.
I think
that's powerful. Has your faith shaped your worldview and your purpose in life? And if so, in what ways?
Totally. I mean, I've had a journey. I think my faith has shaped my worldview in life by growing a heart of compassion, I think, a little bit more. Like I said previously, first of all, I'm a selfish person. Second of all, I've made a lot of mistakes. And third of all, I've always kind of lived in a bubble. So what my faith has really done is, you know, in the midst of all of that, really just dug out a hole to like just be filled with the love of other people. And I don't really know in terms of the purpose that I have now. I've always wanted to be an actor. It's always been my thing. So from the time I was a little kid, I was acting and up to now. And I think that a lot of it before was really just for this fame and glory and all of the things that come with it. You know, who doesn't want to be Brad Pitt? But now it's more about the fact that that platform allows me to speak to things like this. That platform will give me the opportunity to tell stories that really impact people, that really make them think and feel something bigger than themselves. And that platform allows me to like go off when it's time to go off and actually get your hands dirty and get into it and like be in the face, at the face of the battle.
Right.
You know?
And a lot of actors are doing that now when they have such a big platform from which that they can share these important causes and things. So you're seeing that a lot now.
Yeah. Totally.
I'm grateful I have the pleasure of speaking with you about it because you're doing both of those things really well. All right. So I kind of want to shift gears now and just ask you a few rapid fire personal questions.
All right.
So the first rapid fire question, what is the best piece of advice that anybody has ever given you?
Give yourself a break. Don't be so hard on yourself when you mess up, because that's the way to really let the snowball turn into an avalanche.
Awesome. Where did you go to college and what was your major?
The University of New Mexico. I majored in literature and marketing, but really the only thing that I learned from that school is how to manage a student loan.
What is the last selfless thing that you've done for somebody?
Emptying the dishwasher. My roommates don't like to clean.
What is the last book that left a significant impact on you, and why was that?
Through the Eyes of a Lion by Levi Lesko. His daughter passed away from an asthma attack when she was 4 years old. And it was like 3 days before Christmas, and it was just this terrible situation. And I grew up with Levi's family, but he's a pastor now, and he wrote this book, and it's about really just seeing purpose in the middle of something as disastrous as that, as painful as that. And I highly recommend it for anyone who's going through any sort of loss, anyone who's having a hard time or any broken heart. That book wrecked me.
That sounds heartbreaking.
It was, but it was so good. It was like your heart breaks at the beginning of it, and by the time it's done, it's just like reconstructed.
Right.
It's rebuilt, and it's built in a different, with a different perspective. So for sure, yeah, get that book.
And what are some of your biggest heroes or role models? And they can be alive or dead.
Okay. I'm going to be cheesy. My parents are both great. I love them both. But I'm going to take this minute to shout out my mom, because she's definitely the glue that keeps our family together. We do a lot of things. I'm out in California. I'm buying a car right now. I'm like, Mom, have you seen listing? You know, calling her for stupid stuff like that. But she really, she's like the strongest person I know. She just keeps going and going and going and going and going. And I don't see how she does it. I don't get it. But yeah, she's a pretty incredible woman.
That's great.
Yeah.
What film has most changed your life or your perspective on life?
Okay, so this is super cheesy, but I love Titanic.
Oh my God. I actually like that movie too.
Oh, good. See, everyone, I think everyone likes it.
One of my favorite movies.
It's so good. And you know what's so crazy about it is that I love, okay, so there's two things that I love about that movie. First of all, it went like $100 million over budget.
Yeah.
And it took 6 months longer than it was supposed to. And it was such a nightmare of a production, but it ended up being like the topping blockbuster until Avengers just tipped it recently. But that's super cool for me, because James Cameron, you know, they fight against all of these circumstances, and the way that they actually made this world happen, they built the ship and they kept flooding it.
Yeah.
So they had it on risers and stuff. So I thought that was super cool. But the other thing was that the artistry of it was really like the Jack and Rose scene, mm-hmm. when they're at the front of the Titanic, right? Yeah. And she's like, I'm flying, Jack, I'm flying. What's so cool about it is that they were actually filming another scene, mm-hmm. on the actual Titanic deck. And they saw the sunset, and James had been waiting for like the right light to film that scene. So like in the matter of 15 minutes, they completely flipped their set and they say, we're not filming this anymore, we're changing, the actors go and change their costumes, they come out, they get the crane up to do that wide shot that goes around, and they just shoot it right away. They take it in one shot, and if you actually watch it, you can see it gets a little blurry in the actual scene. And it's just so organic and supernatural, and it's just like something that's just so simple, and it was just there, the sunset.
Yeah, wow.
And that's what made that. Yeah, right? So I really love that. But in terms of perspective from that film, which I can talk about forever because
I
love it, 3 hours of greatness.
It's an epic movie.
It's so good. It is, right? It's about sacrifice. They both could have fit on the door, but then there wouldn't have been a sacrifice at the end of it. And that's super important because she wouldn't have been as grateful for him. Speaking of which, but I think that it's really about, you know, going against the odds and really kind of forging your own path. Like, that movie skyrocketed James Cameron to be able to do Avengers, or not Avengers, sorry, Avatar, and all of these other big films that he started doing, you know? So I think that it's really important to kind of just, I love that film, not only because it's a beautifully written story, beautifully filmed project, and it was ingenious in the way that they actually produced it, but it was also the fact that it wasn't supposed to happen. Not that way. It went way over budget. They could have stopped it at any time. It could have completely fallen apart.
Yeah.
But they took a risk. They took a big, big risk, and they ended up seeing the payoff because of it. Right. You know?
Yeah.
That's, so for life, I guess, perspective, it's like, take more risks.
Definitely.
Give yourself a break.
All right, so I just have a couple of final questions before we wrap up the interview. What is next for you, and where can people keep in touch with the work that you're doing?
Next for me, this next year is going to be about creating a lot. I'm currently writing a script about my time in the Philippines, but it's more of a love story than anything else, which I thought could be kind of fun, like the idea of like the spoiled kid going out to have to work in an orphanage and falling in love with like the young girl who works there and their whole story, which I thought could be a fun story arc. And then just, you know, continuing to try to bring awareness to this cause and getting my hands involved in my local community. I think it's important to note that we can serve wherever we are. You don't need to go across the world to go and, you know, help other people. You can help the mailman by asking them if they'd like a glass of water. You know, like, as humans, it's our simple acts that can be volunteer services. It's those little sacrifices that we take on ourselves that can really brighten other people's day and remind them that they are loved. And I think that that's really important. If you want to follow the work, you can check me out on Insta at Matthew James Alexander. At me.
Awesome. Yeah, so if you're listening, go ahead and follow Matt. And sorry, it was at
Matthew James Alexander.
Awesome.
Right now, like, what's next is I really am looking forward to getting more involved in the Los Angeles community, really getting into my own community in West Hollywood and just helping where I can. You know, I'm a pair of hands and I can do a lot. So let's do a lot.
That's incredible, Matt. I want to commend you for being a wonderful human being. Thank you for the work that you and your dad are doing to tackle some of the toughest challenges that we as a human community face, which is really taking care of our youngest and our most vulnerable citizens. Thank you so much for taking your time today, and I'm really grateful for us having the chance to have this conversation.
Thanks, Sean. It's been so much fun.
Appreciate it,
man. I'm glad that we were able to do this. This is super exciting. I'm sure the kids are going to love hearing this, too.
That's great. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for listening until the end of the interview. The important takeaway from my interview with Matt is that no matter your life circumstances, you can always begin using your life for a bigger purpose today. The plight of those in poverty is extreme. Yet, his accounts prove to him that those in poverty can still be so happy and vibrant with so little. The orphan crisis around the globe can seem daunting. But the good news is that there are things that we can do about it. First, do consider adopting. Attend an adoption fair, get more information, and meet with your local family services office. There are children to adopt internationally or through foster care. And providing a child with a forever home is a beautiful thing, both for you and the child. If adoption is not an option for you, consider volunteering for an organization like Big Brothers Big Sisters or Kids Hope USA. And you can always help organizations that support families in their adoption journey. Make sure that you study and research ethical organizations, volunteer responsibly, and make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. Make sure that you're clear why you're volunteering and that you're respecting the local laws of the country that you're serving in. And make sure to keep an eye out for bad organizations that are putting profits before people, and continue to support the good organizations like Friends of the Fatherless that are helping orphan leaders lead more responsibly and encourage reunifying of families. Please pass this on to your friends if they are a humanitarian or they would like to be, or they have a heart for service and are just interested in volunteerism in general. This podcast is for those change makers and do-gooders out there in the world. It's a way to keep people inspired and focused on serving various communities without feeling alone in their industry or under-acknowledged. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you start out the new decade impacting the world more than ever before. Keep spreading love, you guys. Thanks so much for listening.